okay? Are you guys doing jury? Are you doing like everybody in court yet or what?
Judge Wheeler was in court, but it's cleared out. He got a bunch of pleas and the doctor cleared out.
Okay, okay. We have Bristol Fire Chief Dale Hobby. You here?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for your service. Hannah Casso, Liberty County Commission.
Oh, hi.
District 2. Doyle Brown, District 4. And Scott Phillips, District 5. You guys here? So we have three commissioners. Where's the Bristol mayor? Where are you at?
Here.
Hi.
Oh, yeah. Come in. City Clerk of Bristol. And then the chair of the Bristol City Council. You guys here?
Okay.
Thank you. Who did I miss?
Liberty County School Board.
Okay. We have the whole school board here?
All of them. We have four.
Okay. Good. Well, thank you all for coming. We appreciate it. I have Dane Eagle here. He's the executive director for the Department of Economic Opportunity for the state of Florida. And I also have Jamal Sal, who's from Enterprise Florida. And we're here today. Today, we're announcing that the state of Florida, through the Department of Economic Opportunity, is awarding $29 million to 42 small and rural communities through the Florida Small Cities Community Development Block Grant Program. And fortunately, of that $29 million and of those 42 awards, $700,000 are being awarded for neighborhood revitalization projects in Liberty County. So we're happy to be able to make that. The funds will be used for infrastructure improvements like paving roads and replacing water meters. So we're excited to be able to help for that. These awards are limited to either municipalities that have less than 50,000 or counties that have an unincorporated population less than 200,000. Obviously, Liberty County qualifies for that. So we've done about $60 million for small communities since 2019 through this block grant program, and we're happy to be able to be here today to announce additional awards. We also have additional assistance that Dane Eagle is marshaling. We have a $35,000 award for the city of Bristol through the Competitive Florida Partnership Grants Program. And so this helps ensure resiliency of Florida's small and rural communities by funding the development of strategic plans which focus on economic growth, diversity, community design, and disaster preparedness. And so this will help the city of Bristol advance economic development. We're also giving Liberty County $15,000 grant to develop a communications infrastructure master plan. Following Hurricane Michael, the county struggled with communications between response agencies, so this money will be provided to be able to help provide a way forward from that. So, and we're also working with our Department of Environmental Protection to lease Liberty County a new jail facility. We're hoping to finalize the details for the lease in the coming months. So we're, when I tell my folks, we obviously have a very big state, 22 million people, a lot of different types of communities. And I told Dane that making sure we're not overlooking small cities and small counties is important. And quite frankly, when you do this and you tend, we can make a lot more headway a lot of times in some of the smaller areas because the money goes farther and you can really make a positive impact. And so we've really been dedicated to that ever since we helped with the Hurricane Michael, and obviously that money continues to come in various different ways. But this is another example of us doing that. We also have, I got in the budget that we just signed into law a couple weeks ago, or actually we did it about a month ago now, I got $75 million for my job growth grant fund as governor. Now that goes to workforce development or infrastructure, and I think we're gonna probably use the lion's share for infrastructure. And so what we do with that is if there's a local infrastructure need in a community and they have resources, we can kind of pair our resources and hopefully get the job done. So as you look around things that you may be wanting to do, you consider applying through our office for that as well, because we are going to be making awards for that over the next hopefully several months. So I'm going to let Dane Eagle say a few things, but and then obviously we'll open it up and y'all can tell me whatever you think is appropriate for me, and we're happy to be as helpful as we can.
I want to thank the governor for his leadership and for y'all gathering today. And just like the governor said, we wanted to make us focus on small and rural cities and municipalities, counties. So we made a few stops today, but Liberty County is the third, but obviously not the least. You guys are the enchilada today. We've announced four different grants throughout the state with my partner Jamal Saul, Secretary of Economy, and you guys are receiving three of them. So that's a pretty big deal. We at the Department of Economic Opportunity, we are three silos. We are workforce development, we're business development, and we're community development. The way I look at that is those are three legs of a stool. If you take off one of those, the rest can't survive. So we need to have all of those to make sure you have economic development. So these community development grants are so important to making sure that your citizens, your residents, you all have what you can to move yourself into the future. So $700,000 for paving roads and replacing water meters, $15,000 for the communications infrastructure managed plan. I think after Hurricane Michael, y'all realized that needed some work. I'm happy to help provide some assistance there. And $35,000 the city of Bristol for economic development strategic plan. Now my staff, they're very talented and dedicated, and they'll be working with the city and the county to make sure those plans are doing everything they can for your residents. We look forward to serving you more, as the governor said. We'll keep pushing those out. Job Growth Grant Fund, please get your applications in. If you got some needs there, we'd love to review them and maybe come back. So appreciate the opportunity.
I try not to come empty-handed. So see, usually, not always, but usually, I usually have some good news. You want to say anything?
Well, thank you, Governor. I just want to thank you first. This is, you have made multiple trips to Hurricane Michael Impact Zone, and it means a lot to us. As rural communities, we feel overlooked oftentimes, but you haven't done that. And I remember you were on the ground right after the storm hit. You've been back several times, and you've helped over and over again, and we just really appreciate that.
How much have we done for Michael at this point?
Michael, put me on the spot. I'll have to go back and look. We have, speaking of Michael, we have the disaster recovery and mitigation applications open. So these are long-term funds that we can put back in the community 6 and 12 years. We just opened those up. For FEMA, you've given out quite a lot of money. I don't have those numbers, but we're just starting that cycle. For Michael, $111 million is on the table, and we did announce about $111 million.
And that's in addition to all the FEMA, stuff that we've done. So we're happy to work through those. And they want to, I told them, I was like, just get some of this federal stuff really does. I mean, it's like a 12-year window where you do. So it really is more long-term. At the same time, I was like, you know, we might as well get out as soon as possible. We'll just get it out and get it going. So he's working on that. And I think we're going to be able to do a lot of awards, which obviously it'll impact this county, it'll impact many. I mean, there's a lot of counties that were affected by Michael, so there's a lot of needs out there.
Do we have anybody want to chime in with anything that's going on here, or any things that we can do to be helpful?
I'm sorry, go ahead, Sheriff.
I do, Governor. Sheriff, Buddy Money, I'd like to thank you for keeping that money in the budget, which helps us try to start having plans for building a new jail.
Yep.
And we appreciate you very much for that. And we're looking forward to working with not only you, but the legislature, Jason Shook, and everybody who can assist us in attaining that goal for Liberty County. Thank you.
And we did, we're going to hopefully get it out the door in August, but we did get approved $1,000 bonuses for all law enforcement and first responders. So I know they're working on putting that together. I got briefed on it the other day, so we'll be hopefully distributing all that in August, and as well for the principals and the teachers, all the public school principals and teachers are getting $1,000 bonus. So that's going to come in August as well. So that's between those two, that's probably about close to 350,000 individuals across Florida between principals, teachers, police, fire, and EMTs. So we're proud of that.
I want to publicly say, and I think I can speak for everybody in this room, thank you for opening our schools.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you that. We didn't have anything to compare that to. We've never had anything happen like that. And so, you know, the teachers, the staff, the non-instructional, everybody worked really hard to finish the spring of that year. But to work in the summer, but to have you in leadership, have some vision, to say these schools need to be open, and we look around at neighboring states where schools are still struggling to get open. Some are not going to open. Some are going to have some hybrid models. I am grateful to you and your leadership for allowing the districts in Florida to be open and get back to some normalcy, and we couldn't have done that without you, so I applaud you and thank you for your effort. Thank you.
Well, I think it's important. I mean, obviously, one of the reasons we want to do the bonuses is because we had the administrators, principals, teachers coming in and overwhelmingly doing a very good job. I mean, I had some sue me that they didn't want to do school. But most in Florida, most of the teachers wanted to get back, particularly in a place like Liberty, they wanted to get back. And so I think that really made an impact, because I think a lot of the teachers recognized the remote was just inferior. And we did better in remote in Florida than probably any state. But even with that, it's inferior. And so you really needed to get the kids back in. We didn't force the parents, because at that time, people were, I think, wrongly freaking out, but they were freaking out like this. And we now know, we knew at the time, but now I think more people acknowledge that this is a minimal risk for kids, certainly not a risk that would justify stunting their development over. And they're not really engines of spreading this around the community. Although I would say, even if they were, you don't put kids last, okay? We're supposed to put our kids first. That's what I would do, as with my kids, and I know all of you would do that for your kids. So, but the bottom line is, it was the right thing to do, and I think the districts like Liberty that went head first and said, we're gonna get it done, all of them did very well. And you look around the country, when they refused to go back to school, they got themselves in a rut. And now they're saying this, that, they're gonna come up with any excuse that they can as to why they shouldn't have a normal school year. And make no mistake, that's gonna be very damaging for these kids. We had people who had moved from California, Illinois, these states, they'd moved to Florida, the families would move, just because they couldn't get their kids into school in person. We had people that couldn't, they would have been football recruits. They couldn't play. They wouldn't let them play sports in California. So they're moving here. And people from Wisconsin and Michigan. And I mean, it's unbelievable the stories that you see. But I think of all the things that are done to just keep kids out of school for a year, year and a half, that's got to be probably the worst policies that we've seen in this country in a long time domestically. And it'll have long-term ramifications for sure. So we're happy that the folks in Florida stepped up. I mean, obviously, we had to set the tone at the top, but really, you had folks in all these school districts that worked really hard. It was a unique experience, unique environment, and I think overwhelmingly, the teachers and the principals responded very well, and I think the parents were very happy. In fact, I don't know if it was true here, but I can tell you, I remember when the school year first started, all this media was there trying to like act like this was like, you know, going to be a disaster. They wanted it to fail. Many of the media wanted it to fail, by the way, particularly New York corporate media. But so they were doing that and all this stuff. And so they were acting like this. But the parents were happy. I mean, they were literally bringing in gifts to the teachers, thanking the teachers. Everyone was so happy to be back, because you kind of take it for granted that you have schools. Like, why would you close schools? Like, if there's a hurricane for a couple days, but it was said to have an extended closure is just not something we've ever done in this country. And so I think everyone was really, really happy. And I think that they did appreciate being in Florida compared to many of these other states. And so we're happy, and obviously we're gonna have a normal school year coming up in August. And I know y'all will be ready to go.
Secretary, we just want to tell you again, thank you for your grants. Secretary, your staff is always very supportive of us. Any technical questions that we may have, even from a programmatic standpoint, grants are a major part of our budget, not only from a recovery standpoint, but from an economic growth opportunity. We just have very little fiscal opportunities, again, fiscally constrained county due to the amount of state and federal lands that we have, that are tax exempt. So the grants that we're able to get, and this money will go very far, will be very good stewards of some of the great.
Great. You know, fortunately, from the state's perspective, in terms of our fiscal outlook, when COVID hit, you had Disney closed, like a lot of people were canceling vacations, and all these experts were saying, look, this is going to be a big hit for the economy of Florida. It's going to be the worst. They were like, it's going to be such a disaster. So they were predicting like a massive budget shortfall and all this other stuff. Turns out, we have stronger budget reserves than we probably ever had. We're going to probably have over $10 billion in reserve for a budget that is about $100 billion. It'll probably be less than that next year because some of the federal money we've spent on testing and vaccine and stuff, it won't be happening. But bottom line is our revenue is coming in way over projection every month now. And that's just, I think, a testament that the state's been open. People have wanted to come here, not only just to move here, but even just to visit. Florida was like the respite for people. I would go to different parts, and I would just be walking down a street or going somewhere, and people would come up to me from Michigan and Illinois, and they would thank me. They're like, this is the only place we can go to get sanity with what's going on in our state. So a lot of these places, particularly the Panhandle, they never did better with hospitality than they did in 2020 and 2021. And most places in Florida for 21 are setting records. Restaurants, hotels, a lot of those. We don't have the conventions like we did pre-COVID, but I think that'll come back. That's just more people's comfort level. But we've done big events. We were the first state to do a full indoor sporting event. We did UFC in April in Jacksonville, and it was great. Now everyone's doing all this stuff, but we were the first one to do that. But the fiscal, because when you go through these things, obviously it's turbulent and you need to plan accordingly. And we were able to handle whatever happened, but we actually came out stronger than we would have been projected had you not had COVID at all. And so we're positioned to where we don't know what's going to happen in the future. I think Florida's got great fundamentals, but you see this inflation with what they're doing in D.C. and some of the other stuff that could be problematic. I don't know. No one knows for sure where that leads, but to the extent it imposes economic turmoil on the country, I mean, I don't think Florida will be immune to some of that, but we have a cushion to be able to navigate any bumps in the road that we encounter in the future. And so I think that's really prudent leadership, is to do all you can, obviously now for your folks, but also to understand that what's in the future, there's a variety of contingencies. You got to plan for things, for problems arising, and you got to be able to meet those. And so we're in a great position to be able to meet it. People thought we were going to have to eviscerate K-12 education this year funding. They thought we were going to have to do, actually a lot of his colleagues thought that even up until the end. I told them, I was like the one guy last summer saying, we're going to be really good. They're like, no. I'm like, trust me. Then I did my budget. How was he able to do this? And then sure enough, the realization set in, hey, we have good fundamentals. We made prudent cuts last year when we needed to, and we're able to go ahead with a full head of steam. So hopefully we have smooth sailing for the foreseeable future, but if we don't, I think we're ready to handle any contingencies. Yeah, it's amazing how outside of maybe 100 miles each way here, people just don't appreciate Hurricane Michael. Because part of it was, this was just a storm in the Gulf. It was not a Category 5 storm. And then all of a sudden, it picked up and then just boom, like a buzzsaw. And it kind of happened so quickly. And obviously, news changes or whatever. But in terms of impact, I mean, where that impacted, I mean, that was one of the strongest. I mean, I would say in the last 50 years in Florida, you'd have Andrew and Michael are the two that were the strongest. And different storms do different things. I mean, this was not a huge, like, water event. You know, it was mostly just like a tornado almost went through and was doing. And so some others may not be as strong. Sometimes they can, if they hit in the right spot in Florida, cause a lot of damage with the water. So there's different things, but it was a total sledgehammer coming through. And it was really just the luck of the draw. I mean, there were parts that got absolutely killed, but then literally you go a little bit further west, and it was almost like nothing had even happened. So it was very strong and very concentrated on the areas that it really whacked, whacked well. But I mean, it did a lot of damage. And when we were looking at, we were doing ELSA, you know, obviously we were prepared for that. But when you're talking about something getting to like category one, I mean, that's not even in the ballpark of what Michael was doing. And it's obviously you take it seriously, but not even, it's night and day compared to that. So we're, and then it was interesting too. I mean, I remember going right after the storm, the buildings that were built to withstand that, like they actually did withstand it. So you'd have a building that was maybe older and it would be totally done. And then next door, the building would be standing, even homes, depending on how they were built with some of the construction. I mean, there's nothing, when you have some of these homes that were built a long, long time ago, I mean, that's part of the risk of that. But it was definitely, I mean, you would just see, I mean, boom, if it didn't have a certain amount of strength, Michael just totally knocked it off.
Absolutely did. Governor, could you give us an update on surf side and things standpoint?
Sure. So you know, the surf side, the Champlain Towers South collapse, I don't know that there's been very many examples of this in modern American history where you have a collapse that was not due to weather or not due to obviously something like an Oklahoma City or 9/11 where you have terrorism. And so when I got the call, I was very early in the morning on that Thursday. I just, the way it was described, partial collapse, I thought maybe some of the balconies fell down or whatever. And obviously it was serious. We immediately had people dispatching there. I went there that day and on the scene. And you saw it on TV, you're like, man, this is bad. But then when you got there in person, the TV didn't do it justice because you had these floors just pancaking down. So when you're standing there, you'd see the balconies just one on top of another. And when you're trying to do the rescue, so those guys, they had the search and rescue were on scene immediately. They did rescue a lot of people from the standing tower. And there was, I think, a couple people that may have gotten rescued from the top of the rubble initially, but not a lot of people. Because I just think the impact was so dramatic that there just wasn't places where, because you want to have a void where someone could be. But I think it just went down like a ton of bricks. And so I think it's tragic, but what added to the tragedy was families obviously had loved ones. They started converging that day. We had them at the Surfside Community Center, and they just wanted information and answers about, can you find my mother? Can you find my brother? Whoever they were looking for. And even though it was a tough scene, I was just thinking like, okay, they've got to pull out some people, right? You got to have some. So you kind of wait. And then the next day, has there been any news in the search and rescue? We haven't found anyone. And then the next day. And so I think it was really, really devastating. Not that any of these tragedies aren't, but to know that happened, to suspect the worst, but to still hold out hope that maybe you can find someone, but then never getting any positive news. And I think probably the reality was it was such a devastating collapse that they're probably going to say there were never really a realistic chance. I'll tell you, they had dogs, they had all that. Anything, time they thought they saw anything, they went, they would dig tunnels and all this. There just wasn't a lot of signs of life, unfortunately. So that was kind of just that process. And then I remember, I think it was the Saturday, so two days later, I'm out there and there were these fires that started raging underneath. And so you had all this smoke coming out of there. And I'm standing out there about 100 yards from the pile, and I could hardly breathe standing away from it. I'm like, man, if someone's caught in there, I was like, this is just, it's such a disaster. And so those guys work round the clock, and basically did everything they could. We eventually, the rest of the tower was wobbling, so they wouldn't even let the responders go to different parts of the pile that would be impacted by that. So we finally said, look, we have a storm coming. We've got to deal with this. And so we got a demolition team to come in and just take it down. And that allowed them to access all parts of the pile. And unfortunately, they found a lot of people who were deceased, but at least they were identifying people. Because, I mean, that closure was important for the family. And they obviously want to know, so they're able to do that. But they brought down the remaining part of the tower. They literally, my emergency director explained to me what they were going to do. It was tilting towards the ocean, which they didn't want, so they were going to tilt it and then bring it down. And sure enough, they brought it down. You could have been standing 50 yards away from that, and there would have been no debris on you at all. It just went straight down. They were able to, and they've moved a lot of that debris out of there now for that. But it's the type of thing, you have such a wide variety of people in the tower. You had some who were 90 plus years old that had huge families. They had, there was one family that, I mean, she probably had four or five kids, and then they had all these kids. Like literally, you'll meet with this entire family and see. Then you have some who were family of four, and then all of a sudden missing and presumed deceased. And then unfortunately, you had some young kids, and you even had young adults, some newlyweds. There's a family that we've been working with. The daughter just got married like a few months ago, and they've been basically living. And so it's been a really emotional process. I think it's been very difficult for a lot of folks. We've gotten a lot of charity support. Obviously, we have different federals helping FEMA and all that. But there's been a big charitable outpouring, and we've helped, when we can with different things that we've been able to do. So, but it's a unique and devastating tragedy. And if you think about it, to be missing, and then obviously they've now identified, obviously a lot of people. You have a big hurricane when we do emergency response, like. And you could cover major counties and you wouldn't have this many people missing. I mean, so this is just this one area, and it's been tough. So, but I think the people responded very well. Some people take it for granted that if things go south, who shows up? It's these first responders that show up, and they're there immediately. They saved a lot of people from the tower that night. I've been able to talk to a lot of the people who got out, and it wasn't a very pleasant experience to be caught in there, and so they were able to save a lot of people right off the bat. And literally, you could be in part of the tower, like this guy showed me his thing, like you go right outside his door, look right next door, and it's all rubble. And so he was probably 10 feet away from being in the clear for whatever reason in terms of how they've done it. Had other families, they try to escape, and then the door would be blocked and this and that, and they finally go off a balcony or everything. So the families that lost someone, obviously devastating. Families that escaped, they're very happy that they're still with us, but they wasn't exactly like they packed up their whole condo and got out of there. I mean, they have no possessions basically at this point if that was their main residence. So some of them had their wallet, purse, phone, a couple, some of those things, but they didn't pack a suitcase or any of that. And so I wanted them to be able to go back in and get all their belongings, but the building wasn't safe. No one would allow that because they said it could collapse. And so we didn't want to lose any more lives at that point. And so they understand that, but still getting them back on their feet, that's a difficult process. And then they're going to have some emotional things to deal with once it, because a lot of them, even as of like last week when I was down there, a lot of them have been kind of been an adrenaline rush. They got out and they haven't fully processed, I don't think. And so that's going to happen. And how some of the younger kids handle it. Some of them are so young, they probably don't know any difference. But some of these kids that are 10, 12, 14 years old, that's a pretty traumatic experience to go through. Anything else for the good of the order?
And we really appreciate it. Yep. Thank you for coming.
Okay. Well, we're working on some of the other stuff. Michael, we do have Job Growth Grant Fund, And so if we're able to, I know we'll definitely do more on the Michael, that's for sure. But as we can do some of the more on some of these targeted infrastructure, we'll be sure to keep you all in mind. So if you have some needs, apply. Can't guarantee, but I can tell you won't get it if you don't ask, that's for sure. So ask. So, okay, good. All right. We, yes, sir.
No, I was going to say, we appreciate you coming.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. Happy to do it. All right. We'll see you all soon then.